Welcome to CCNA 1, Revision Lecture 3, I think. Yeah, I think it is, actually. And we're going to start off with Attila's question. There you go. How's that for service?
That's great. Encapsulation, where does it actually start? Does it start in the application layer or the presentation layer of the OSI?
The OSI reference model, it starts at the application layer. The application must encapsulate its data for transmission on the application layer, and it is then encapsulated on all levels of the OSI reference model, which results in a situation where OSI compliant protocol stacks are somewhat bloated and require a lot of overhead to actually transfer protocol data units through the OSI reference model, which is why a lot of protocols do not adhere to the OSI reference model. However, they do use aspects of the OSI reference model for their design.
Okay.
And are you with us this morning, George? Ah, jolly good. All right. Well, there's another subnetting exercise up on the announce list for you guys, because I did help Hitendra out with his last night, and I thought in the desire to be fair and just, I'd give you all another one so that you didn't get a free exercise. So, and that goes for everybody. If we can see some answers for that subnetting exercise by next week, it's not a very tricky one, but should keep you busy for a few minutes between now and next Friday. Now, does anybody... I have a request from Attila to go over logical operations, which is certainly not a problem. We'll do that. Does anybody else have any other questions at this stage before I get started on logical operations and possibly some questions from the module exams? Now, we are all clear that the deadline for CCNA and ITE, unless you are continuing your studies in ITE 1 and CCNA 1... into second semester, and some students are doing that because they don't feel they have enough time to finish the courses, is the 22nd of July. The 22nd of July, the 22nd of July, the 22nd of July. I repeat, the 22nd of July. Exactly.
That's great, because that'll give me 3 weeks to learn CCNA before I do the final exam.
Well, that is the idea, and as we've said, we're quite happy to give you guys plenty of revision time, and you can take a bath and listen to the lectures or whatever, and hopefully not drop your computer in the bathtub, because that would be an occupational health and safety issue. We couldn't have that. But yes, if you can, that will give you 2-3 weeks of study to brush up on the pieces of CCNA that you might be a bit rusty on. And that sort of thing. But yes, the deadline is the 22nd of July, and if I get any more questions on it, I'm going to stick the deadline up on the class notes front page, and that way everybody will know what it is. In fact, I might even get that done this afternoon. We'll put the deadline up on the class notes right at the top of the class notes homepage.
And it's amazing, if you read the modules more than once, how much you miss the first time and the second time. Because I read the ITA ones 4 times, and I was still learning new stuff the 4th time around.
Yes, look, unfortunately, Attila funding prevents us from sending you a solid gold medal, but that's the sort of... that's the sort of dedication we'd like to see from a lot of our students. One read through is certainly not going to give you a good overview of what's in the modules. In fact, there are some funky statistics that claim that you take in about 20% or something of material when you read through it. And obviously more successive readings of those modules will certainly get a lot more of that information in. So yes, we're very happy to see that you're reading through your modules and multiple times, and I would really suggest that if people don't have time to read through the whole of CCNA 1, and I would hope they do, but they may not, that you read through the chapter summaries, and if any of the chapter summaries for each module sort of make you go, "Oh, what was that?" then perhaps a close questions that you didn't understand would be in order. I'm not suggesting that we all have to read the whole course as rigidly as Attila does, but obviously some of the more complex modules and things would be a good thing to go back over before you sit the final exam, especially to refresh your memory. I've just got to zap into my setup and turn my sensitivity on my microphone down because it's a bit sensitive as far as the AutoVox. So I will be back in about 5 or 10 seconds because I can't talk while I'm in setup. Okay, yes, that is triggering. Good. Alrighty.
There's not many of us here today.
No, Elise is actually going into Vision Australia to pick up some training material to train her auntie on how to use a computer. And some of the people who work haven't been attending the lectures because they're at work when the lectures are being attended. Gemma has already completed CCNA1 last year, which sadly means that every time she diagnoses the network, I get a fault definition that refers to the layers of the OSI reference model, which does have its advantages. But she's off doing orientation and mobility and will be in a little bit later. Who else are we missing? Geraldine's, of course, still recovering from her surgery at home, and I hope she's enjoying putting her feet up. And yeah, a few other people just couldn't make it today. So yeah, we're a bit thin on the ground today. Alrighty. Okay, we have had a request for a review of logical operations. Can anybody tell me what one of the logical operations are? Can you give me an example of a logical operation? We just one from each person so that somebody doesn't go through all of them and spoil everybody else's fun.
One's and...
Yep, we certainly have one being and. Can anybody else give me an example of another one? You can either say it or type it into chat. Yes, we have or from one of our local students. It was Glenn, just so that he can get the accolades on the recording there. And not. Okay. So we've got and, or, not. We've also got implies and a few other funky ones that we don't tend to use a lot. So we won't go into the implies and stuff. Okay. Boolean operations work on a single bit at a time, or a pair of bits. And in fact, they are usually used in electronic circuits with gates. And a gate is an electrical construct usually made with transistors. And we don't go into transistor theory, but anybody who's working with transistors would know that there is three wires on a transistor, on the NPN types, the collector, the base, and the emitter. And the current will not flow through a transistor from the collector to the emitter unless you apply a current to the base. And that allows you to do some pretty nifty switching things. You can switch things on and off by causing voltage to be present or absent from the base, and that will actually tell the collector and the emitter whether they are allowed to conduct electricity. So there you go. And there are these little pictures that you can draw up with all the symbols and stuff that isn't in our course because we're not an electronics course, that show you how networks of these transistors can be made to cause these things to happen. Okay, so logic gates usually take two inputs, and they take two binary inputs, where on is a 1 and off is a 0. And they return one binary output, which is either off or on. If you are anding together sequences of binary digits, performing logical operations on sequences of binary digits, you line the bits up right justified so that all of the bits from the top and the bottom line up, and you apply the logical operation to each vertical column of bits. So if we've got 100 and 111, we would then apply the AND to the right-hand set of bits, the middle set of bits, and the left-hand set of bits if you put the numbers one on top of the other. This is also good for your handy-dandy pegboard TM, that you will be able to do these logical operations on your pegboard. Put the two binary quantities into the first and second row of pegboard, apply your logical operation, and put the result down the bottom. Alrighty, the operations we have are essentially work in the following ways. AND returns a 1 on the output if both of the inputs are 1. And there's what we call a truth table that you can write out for all of your logical operations. So in that particular instance, 0 and 0 is 0, 0 and 1 is 0, 1 and 0 is 0, 1 and 1 is 1. So both of the inputs must be a 1 for the output to be a 1 when you are performing an AND. Everyone cool with that?
Yep.
In other words, if you have a pipe and in that pipe you have two taps that are in line with the spray thing, you will only be able to water your garden if both of the taps are turned on. Okie dokie, and just to repeat, because I think you guys may have missed it, the deadline for IT1 and CCNA1 is the 22nd of July. That is the 22nd of July, and a message has been posted to the announce list. Okie dokies, I think we'll all have been sick of the 22nd of July by the time I'm finished. Okay, we're going through logical operations. AND is the output of the logic gate is a 1 when the input of the two inputs is a 1. So 1 and 1 is 1, 1 and 0 is 0, 0 and 1 is 0, 0 and 0 is 0. So that's AND. And I will mention there is a question involving an AND in the final exam. I was looking through the final exam the other day and there is one there. Okay, an OR gate provides a 1 on the output of the gate if either of the inputs is a 1. Can anybody tell me the combination on an OR gate that will give a 0 as the output?
0, 0?
Yes, in fact, more specifically, 0 or 0, because we should always put the operation between the two numbers.
Okay.
So the way I think of it, and this is just the way I personally think of it, if you have a logical operation and you OR things and you've got ones in the operand, it's actually going to turn on bits if they're already turned off, and is going to turn off bits unless you've actually got the bits set in both places. So OR sort of turns bits on, and turns bits off if the bits are set to 0. So that's just another way of looking at it.
So in the OR, if you've got a 1 or 0, that'll give you a 1 in the output.
That is correct. And as will 0 or 1, and as 1 or 1 will give you a 1. So if you picture two kids with garden hoses attached to two different pointing at the same garden, either kid will be able to water the garden if one of the taps is turned on. Okay, there are a couple of other operations. The NOT operation will reverse all of the bits in a byte, or all of the bits in a quantity, so zeros become ones and ones become zeros. This is also referred to as a 2's complement. It is used in certain situations if you've got the wrong outputs on something and you need things around the other way for a reason, for certain reasons if you're making electrical circuits. There is one more logical operation that bears mention as far as our course is concerned, and that operation is an exclusive OR. An exclusive OR provides a 1 on the output if either but not both of the inputs are 1. Okay, so 1 or 0 is 1, 0 or 1 is 1, But one or... I've just broken my own rule. One or exclusive or zero is one. Zero exclusive or one is one. But one exclusive or one is zero.
What was that last one again?
One exclusive or one is zero. Now, we use logical operations when we are performing subnetting and things. If you AND the if you AND an IP address with the subnet mask, you will get what as the result? I can see I've thrown a curly one. Does anybody want to think about that for a little bit longer, or shall I put you all out of your misery? If you have an IP address
put us out of our misery.
And you AND it with the subnet mask, you get the network address. That's right, and George got it right. So George gets a cyber lollipop. Okay, so if we take an example, if we have the IP address of 192.168.1.47 and we AND it with 255.255.255.0, you will get 192.168.47.0 as the result, and that is the network address for the 192.168.47 subnet. And a good morning to my name, who has just joined the channel. We have no idea who you are, but welcome along nonetheless. So,
but to work that out, we had to convert them into binary, though, didn't we?
Yes. I just shortcutted it and did it in my head. But yes, you would have to work. You'd have to convert both of the IP addresses, the IP address and the subnet mask, into binary. Put two quantities into your pegboard and apply the operation to those two numbers, which is a little bit time consuming, but not too bad once you get going.
Gotcha.
Okie dokies. So, everybody sort of happy with logical operations? I mean, I think there were some worksheets that had some things in them on that, although we could stick a couple of example exercises up if we needed to. We'll see how we go, but if people want a couple of example exercises, I can bash a couple up after lecture.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okie dokie. Alright, does anybody have any other questions before we start going on to exam quizzy bits?
Next week, can we do hexadecimals?
Well, we can do... I can do a bit of hexadecimal now if you want to, but we could do it next week. Take your pick.
Yeah, whatever suits you.
Okay, so we're re-going over the concept of how to convert stuff to hexadecimal.
Yep.
Well, okay, and don't forget, and I will go over it again, of course, but don't forget you can always, if you've downloaded the lectures, you can always go back and listen to my excellent effort on describing the conversion processes in Module 1. And Winamp has some very good jump-to-time dialogues to it. Wow.
What's that?
I have no idea, but somebody's got a very interesting audio setup. There's nothing like going into the setup dialog, guys, and going to the test with test button, which you can get to by pressing Shift-Tab, and testing your audio before you come on channel. Okie dokie. Converting things to hexadecimal. We'll quickly whiz back over that again. Also, don't forget we have the lectures from Chapter 1. If you are converting a quantity to hexadecimal, you take the value that you wish to convert, you convert it into binary, You then break the binary quantity into 4-bit sections, which are known as nibbles, and you convert each of the 4 bits into a number between 0 and 15, remembering, of course, that 0 through 9 are written as 0 through 9, 10 is written as A, 11 is written as 12 is written as C, 13 is written as D, 14 is written as E, and 15 is written as F. Therefore, if we wanted to convert the number 15 into hexadecimal, we would convert that into, obviously we know that 15 in binary is 1111. We would then look at the fact that that is 15, and to write 15 in hexadecimal, we would write F, or 0F. If, for example, we wanted to convert the number 27 into hexadecimal, we would have to convert 27 into binary. Now, I have a different method of doing this. The way I convert 27 into hexadecimal is I say, well, 27 minus 16 is, make sure I get this right, 11. Yeah, that's right. And therefore we have one lot of 16, so therefore we have 1, and then we have 11, which is written as B, therefore 27 in decimal is 1B, or 1 bravo, in hexadecimal. 1 times 16 plus 11. Remembering, of course, that the right-hand digit is lots of 16 to the power of 0, which of course equals 1, so therefore the right-hand digit is lots of 1s. The next digit across is lots of 16, or 16 to the power of 1. The next digit across is lots of 16 to the power of 2, or lots of 256. The next digit is lots of 16 to the power of 3, which is lots of 4096. And the next digit across from that is lots of 16 to the power of 4, which is 65,536, which is obviously getting to some quite big numbers. If you wish to convert hexadecimal back to another base, take an example, C5, split the hex number into its individual digits, convert each of those digits into binary, so therefore convert the C into binary, and then convert the 5 into binary. So if we're converting C into binary, that looks like it would be 12. Therefore, that's 4 plus 8, so therefore it's binary 1100. We would then convert the 5 into binary, which is a 4 and a 1, which would be 1001. And if we put those two quantities together, that should be the binary representation of C5. I do concede that carrying all of that around in your head could be somewhat of a challenge, and I would refer you to the List archives earlier this year, where some exercises and conversion examples were posted to the announced list, I believe, in late February or early March. But ironically enough, you can actually pull up the archives of the list, and there's a reference to them at the bottom of each posting. And if you sort by poster, all of my articles will group themselves together under Kerry Hoth, and that will may make it easier for you to find the exercises that you're after. Was there any specifics on that you wanted clarified, Attila, that I may have whizzed through too fast or not covered sufficiently?
No, that's fine. And I'll listen to Module 1 as well, just to get it into my head.
Yep, no, that's no problem. Well, that's certainly probably a good idea, but yes. So they're the working through of those sorts of things. I do suggest a pegboard for this sort of stuff. Jaws can be used for the conversions, but it is a bit funky to be doing different number bases with speech. Of course, when I do number base conversions, I use a utility called BC, or Bravo Charlie, which runs under Unix, and I just go IBase equals 2, OBase equals 16, and feed in my binary number. But I'm also a teacher, Andy. And once you get your Unix box up and running next term in ITE 2, you can feel free to play with that as well. And next term, everybody will be playing with Red Hat boxes. You will not be required to install your own Linux box, although we do have a podcast on that particular topic. However, you will actually get to play with Red Hat and do a lot of mucking around with the shell and changing permissions and stuff like that. Alrighty, I think we're just about out of questions, so we'll get one more chance if anybody's thought of anything they want, and then we delve into a couple of quiz questions. Alrighty then, fingers ready on the chat things. We want two answers, so we'll take yeses and nos for this one. Which are the following specified as IEEE as substandards of the data link layer? Logical link control? And we're waiting for a couple more answers. We have answers from Attila and George. We don't have any answers from Yogish, AJ, or Enable. Which are defined as sublayers of the OSI data link layer? And we're doing yes or no, logical link control. Jolly good. And we can get an answer from Enable. Okay, well, 6 out of 7 ain't bad. I think that's what Meatloaf said. Okay, logical link control, we're happy with that. How about logical layer control? No, Attila, it's not.
I was just saying if you were awake.
Oh, I'm most definitely awake, don't you worry about that. How about media access control? And we don't have an answer from Attila on this one. Media access control? You don't know. Okay. It turns out the correct answer is yes. Media access control is a sublayer of the OSI reference model, data link layer. The data link layer is made up of two sublayers, media access control and logical link control. Logical link control is responsible for framing and breaking data into frames to be transmitted across the medium. Media access control is responsible for the details of putting signals onto the media, such as fiber optic cable. It's also responsible for CSMA CD and other low-level aspects of the data link on Ethernet. And the MAC and LLC sublayers make up the data link level of the OSI reference model. This is to allow the media to be changed, such as fiber, wireless, or copper cable, without changing the frame format. So, that means that by definition, the other lot are incorrect. Logical link communication, media access communication, physical access communication, and so on. So there we go, the correct answers were MAC and LLC. Okay, I'm going to have to rejigger this one a bit. A packet is travelling from host A to host F, and you're supposed to be looking at the exhibit, but you're not. So what we have is we have host A, and we have a switch, and then we have a link to another switch, and then we have a link to the internet cloud, and then we have a link to another switch, and then another switch, and then it ends up at host F. What happens to frames as they travel from host A to host F? Okay. The frame format is modified as it passes through each switch. The frame format remains the same across each Ethernet segment. The media format is changed as the speed of the transmission is changed. The frame is changed as the frame travels between copper and fiber. Okay, so anybody know the correct answer to that one? The answer is indeed A. The frame format is not changed. Okay, in which two layers of the OSI reference model does Ethernet function? Okay, we'll just get you to put the two layer numbers in. Which two layer numbers does Ethernet function at? No, I have to disagree with you, George, I'm afraid. One and two are the answer we want. Ethernet actually functions at the physical layer and the data link layer. The network layer actually concerns itself with the high-level protocols such as TCP/IP, IPX, or AppleTalk. Everybody happy with that one? Any questions on that, or we're just happy to admit that we weren't full bottle on that one?
Can we have an easy one?
Well, we'll find out what's in the exam, shall we? I'm just looking down and seeing what's in here. This is the Chapter 6 and 7 combo exam. Oh, here's a pretty easy one. Where does the MAC address originate? A. DHCP server database. B. Configured by the administrator. C. Burned into ROM on the network card. D. Network configuration on the computer. Or included in the creation of the processor chip. Okay, we've got any other questions? Any other answers, guys? We've only got George and Attila answering this one. Guys, what is the deal? I mean, we're doing a quiz, and I'm pretty clear as to when the question starts. Is the breakup on the Ventrilo so bad that you guys aren't getting the questions? And that is correct. The correct answer is C.
Kerry, could you please explain why Ethernet is on 1 and 2, the physical and the data link? Why not on the network layer?
Because the network layer actually concerns itself with the transmission of higher-level protocols such as TCP/IP. So, for example, TCP/IP can run over Ethernet, it can run over point-to-point links, it can run over serial links, it can run over laser links, things like that. Whereas Ethernet is a local area network topology, and therefore it only concerns itself with the physical and data link, whereas TCP/IP and other protocols are both a LAN and WAN protocol.
You said the magic word, the local area.
I did, and it's not quite a magic word like please that tends to get you chocolate and biscuits and yummy things, but it is a magic word nonetheless. But Ethernet is a local area networking technology, and it's very important to keep that in mind.
Thanks.
Okay, attention, attention, attention. Oncoming question. Get ready for a question. At what layer of the OSI reference model does the MAC address reside? Can anybody type the layer number into chat? Are we going to get any more answers for this one? Yep, I'm just waiting for... Yep, the correct answer is layer 2. The MAC address exists at the data link layer. Layer 1 only concerns itself with the type of media, signaling methods, and voltages, so the MAC address does not exist at layer 1. And we're not going to incriminate who said that, we're just going to move on, but it is layer 2. We don't want to single anybody out. Much. Okay. A router has, now this one's a little bit of one of a tricky one, so here comes the question, guys. The router has an Ethernet interface, a token ring interface, a serial interface, and an ISDN interface. Which of those will have a MAC address? There's only one of them. Actually, hang on. Actually, I tell a lie. There are actually two answers to this question. You can't say. Well, the options are ISDN, Ethernet, token ring, and serial. Okay, so here are your options. A, serial and ISDN. B, Ethernet and token ring. C, Ethernet and ISDN. D, token ring and serial. That is correct. Ethernet and token ring both have MAC addresses. Alrighty, which two devices can provide full duplex Ethernet connections? We'll have yeses and no, please, guys. Hub. A modem, according to Cisco. A modem, according to Cisco, is not full duplex. Okay, George has lost audio again, rebooting, so we'll wait for him to come back. How about a repeater? Okie dokie. An NIC. No, a repeater is half duplex. So can a NIC be full duplex? It certainly can. How about a layer 2 switch? Alrighty. We might wait for George to come back, I think, for the next question.
How come you can hear George and we can't?
Because George actually typed something into chat. Do you have your text-to-speech turned on so that you can hear what's going on in the chat?
No, because it annoys me.
be aware that you can actually change the voice so that you don't have to have Sam. You can actually have Karen or Lee or any of the Jaws voices going, aye.
But I can only get three voices and they're them stupid Windows ones.
That's because you haven't installed the voices that come with Jaws 8, which are the real speak voices. You have to install those, otherwise you don't have them. Alrighty, I don't know. Yeah?
No, I thought I must have dropped out or something, because you didn't say anything for such a long time.
Oh, well, some people would take that as a blessing rather than a curse. Alrighty, well now we can't wait for George to reboot, so let's refer to the exhibit. Well, it's basically four computers connected with a hub. Which of the following things will cause collisions and errors on the network? Which could cause these things? And there is only one answer that is correct. I'm going to go through a series of answers, and believe me, the first one is going to be A and the fourth one is going to be D. So let's just assume that. Auto-negotiation, fast Ethernet, peer-to-peer shared resources, or administratively configured full duplex. Sadly, Eddie, I can't give you that one. Yes, administratively configured full duplex on a hub. That can certainly cause problems. The trick was administratively configured. As far as I'm concerned, that usually means the administrator has done something silly. And the fact that they also said hub. So, there we go. Well done.
If that was done, would the system crash?
No, the system wouldn't crash, but you'd just see a lot of errors on the network, and various computers would have trouble communicating to other computers on the network. Although, one of the things we did in the room the other day, well, I didn't personally do it, but one of our, I don't know which student, we haven't tracked down the guilty party, we had a cheap Linksys switch, and we have patch panels on the wall, so we had the switch connected into the patch panel on the wall. However, two cables were running from the patch panel on the wall to the switch, and all of the lights were flashing and going crazy. So the switch was not functioning. Alrighty, a workstation and a switch are administratively configured for full duplexy. Sorry, I've just pressed buttons on my braille display. Let's start that one again. A workstation and a switch are configured for full duplex. Which of the following statements is true? Hey, I've just lost my place here. Give me a second. There we are. No collisions will occur on this link. Only one of the devices can transmit at a time. The switch will have priority for transmitting data. The devices will default back to half duplex if excessive collisions occur. Okay, the correct answer is A. There will be no collisions on this link. If it's full duplex, because it's only a workstation and a switch, both devices can in fact transmit at the same time. What are three functions of a network interface card in a PC? So we'll take yeses or noes for this one. An NIC connects the PC to the network media. And don't forget we can type Ys or Ns. Yep. An NIC detects collisions on the Ethernet segment. Ooh, I'm afraid that is not correct. A network interface card does detect collisions on the network segment. That's what the carrier sense multiple access bit of CSMACD means. Okay, an NIC checks the formatting of data before it is transmitted. Yep, you are absolutely correct. It does not check the formatting of the data before it's transmitted. A network interface card passes selective frames to the upper OSI reference model layers. And that is correct. Okay. And we only had to pick three of those. So we've already got them. So how about that? Okay, in an Ethernet LAN, how does a network card know when it is able to transmit data? An Ethernet card transmits data as soon as the frame is received, that's A. The Ethernet card transmits data as soon as it receives a token. The Ethernet card transmits data as soon as it senses a collision. And the Ethernet card transmits data after listening for the absence of a signal on the media. No, the correct answer is in fact D, which was...
It listens.
Yeah, it listens before it starts talking, unlike your average student. Okay, I'm just skimming over a question to find another question to give you guys. Alrighty, which statement...
We want a hard one this time.
Which statement describes how CSMACD on an Ethernet segment manages the retransmission of frames after a collision occurs? The first device that detects a collision has a priority for retransmission. The device with the lowest MAC address gets priority. The devices on the network segment hold an election to figure who's going to transmit next. All the devices who are transmitting when the collision occurs do not have priority to retransmit when the collision occurs. And they're your options. That is indeed correct. Oh dear. Alright, what is the maximum distance that 10 base T will transmit a signal before attenuation will affect the signal that is transmitted? You can type the number of meters into chat. Okay, we're still waiting on a couple of answers. This is one of those figures you've got to know, people. It's in the final. And the correct answer was 100 metres, or 328 feet. Yes. Okay, which of the following are fast Ethernet technologies? So we'll choose two of these. So we might as well do yes and no. 100 base 5. Okay, how about 100 base 2? 1000 base F. Don't forget we're looking for fast Ethernet technologies here, so 1000 base anything is not fast Ethernet. How about 100 base FX? Yep, that is correct. And 100 base TX? It certainly is. Okay, at which level of the OSI reference model do the differences between fast Ethernet, standard Ethernet, and gigabit Ethernet occur? Yes, that is correct. Let's get physical, as Geraldine would sing, and she won't today, so we're even missing out on the Good Morning song today.
She's probably at home singing.
Yes, in fact, I'm informed by a reliable source that she sings a song to her three dogs every morning. She sings to them before she feeds them. No, I think we'll bypass the Good Morning song this morning because it's now afternoon. So there we go, we just missed out. How sad. Otherwise, we could have their the song that we had on Wednesday, which was "There was an ad man with a LAN, and Cisco was its name, oh, C-I-S-C-O," and so on. How does the 1000 base T standard use the wire pairs to transmit the signal? Two pairs are used to transmit and two pairs are used to receive. One pair to transmit. One for receive, one for blocking, and one for error correction. All four pairs are used by both hosts in parallel to transmit and receive simultaneously. Two pairs of wires are used as in 100 base 10 and 100 base and 10 base T. Just waiting for a couple more answers. And if you all think I'm being tough and unfair, I'm not particularly worried if you don't pass the final, but you will perhaps be a little bit more worried. And I'll be sad. But that's okay, I know where the pub is. But yes, all four pairs are used in parallel to transmit and receive simultaneously. Okie dokie, which statements describe gigabit Ethernet? Choose two. Operates at 100 megabits per second. Yes or no? Oh dear, if gigabit operated at 100 megabits per second, I'd be a bit upset, given that giga means billion.
Oh well.
Does it require shielded twisted pair cabling? No, it doesn't. No, it requires unshielded twisted pair. Yeah, not shielded. Category 6 cable, the only difference between Category 5 and Category 6 is more twists per meter, and it has that plastic divider down the middle to keep the pairs separated, but it isn't shielded. can be implemented over copper and fiber. Yes, that's absolutely correct. I'd go with that one. Is it primarily used as backbone cabling? Suppose it depends on your budget, but yes, it is often used as backbone cabling. Okay, has everybody had enough of the 6-7 combo exam?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty bored stupid too. Let's find another one. Yeah, so I've got this wonderful thing here called the exam viewer, and I can actually pull up all the exams, including the final exam, and find out what all the questions are. Sadly, though, we're not allowed to take bribes, so that won't help you guys. Okay, maybe a little bit on this one, because this one's fairly graphical. Okay. Okay, what header information is changed by a router in the source information before it is retransmitted out another interface? Only the layer 2 source address? Only the layer 2 destination address? Only the layer 3 source address? Only the layer 3 destination address? Or the layer 2 source and destination address? Or the layer 3 source and destination address? Looks like I've flummoxed you all on this one.
Is it the one that changes both on the layer 3?
No, it's the one that changes both on the layer 2. Routers only tend to change MAC addresses. Okay, what is the primary purpose of a routing protocol? To propagate broadcast messages? To map IP addresses to MAC addresses? To switch traffic to all available interfaces? Or sharing network information between routers? Just waiting for a couple more answers. Okay, looks like I've just caught 40 winks and no more answers have been forthcoming. So, sharing network information between routers. A routing protocol such as RIP, IGRP, BGP, OSPF, etc. is responsible for sharing routing information between routers. A routed protocol such as TCP/IP is routed using routing protocols or static routes. How does a router decide where the contents of a received frame should be forwarded? By matching destination networks against entries in the routing table? By matching destination IP addresses with IP addresses in the ARP table? By matching destination MAC addresses with entries in the CAM table, or by forwarding the frame to all interfaces except for the one on which it was received. No, guys, it's A. By matching destination IP addresses with entries in the routing table. That's okay, nobody got that one right.
How does it get the destination IP addresses in its routing table?
Well, you put them in as the administrator. That's your job. You put the routing table together and it matches the destination address of the packet against the entries that have either been put in the routing table by you or by a routing protocol.
But what about if I'm sending it over to Hungary or somewhere?
Well, there's lots of routers that it's got to go through. And all of those routers have got routing tables in them and they decide how to send it. What actually happens, as we did describe in one of the lectures, what happens if you send the packet to Hungary, your computer doesn't exactly know how to get it to Hungary. It only knows about local hamburgers. Therefore, it sends it to its default gateway, which is your ISP. Your ISP may not know how to get to Hungary. hungry, it's to its default gateway, which might be the Telstra link, and the Telstra link might not know exactly how to get it to hungry, but it might at least send it to the Europe router, and then once it gets to the Europe router goes, oh yes, I know where hungry is. Notice that that has somewhat been simplified, but that's essentially how it works.
Now I get it.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't get broadcast on your network if it doesn't recognize the address. It just gets ditched. And it's a similar analogy to the postal system. Your local mail exchange knows how to register deliver local mail, and the big mail exchanges know how to get mail from one mail exchange to another, and it's actually the local mail exchange at the destination of where you send your letter that is responsible for the bloke driving down the street and squashing all of your flowers with his bicycle. Okay, just looking for another easy question. Well, another question that doesn't have a picture in it. And we are working on getting the answers to the modules 9, 10 and 11 exams recorded so you guys can check your answers. That should happen this weekend if we're lucky. Okay, which device would add security to a network by not forwarding broadcasts? A hub? A router? A switch? A bridge? Or a repeater? Okay, waiting for a few more answers. No, I think you'll find it's actually a router that doesn't forward broadcasts. Remember that broadcasts are at layer 2 of the OSI reference model, and routers tend to work at layer 3. Okay, what do switches and routers use to make forwarding decisions? Switches and routers both use IP addresses. Switches and routers use both MAC and IP addresses. Switches use IP addresses, routers use MAC addresses. Switches use MAC addresses, and routers use IP addresses. And anybody who said D is correct. Okay, at which layer of the OSI model does the device reside that provides the default gateway for a network? Can anybody type in the number of that layer? And the options, in case you wanted to know, were layer 1, layer 2, layer 3, layer 4, or layer 5. So not very helpful. Sadly, no, not layer 4.
What about 3?
Yeah, I'd go more with 3. So, therefore, a default gateway would reside at layer 3 of the OSI reference model. Okay. Okay, which type of routing uses manual entry of addresses and does not scale well in large networks? Interior, exterior, static, dynamic. Yeah, that's right, Glenn. Yes, static would be the answer. Okay, which type of routing allows networks to dynamically adapt to changes? Static, dynamic routing, only default routes, or no routing is necessary. Alrighty. Okay, well, what I'm going to do is, does anybody else have any questions? Otherwise, I'm going to leave you all to go off and revise. Alrighty. Well, have a good weekend, and may your conscience haunt you if you do not do any revision. Enjoy the weekend, everyone. We will be available on Skype and on the mailing lists.
Everyone have a good one.
You're right to hit stop, sir? Or she disappeared? Yeah, can you find the stop button on Wiretap Pro? Or whatever it is, and we'll leave her to export it, because I don't know how to do that, but...